and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know,
was that a nod to King Charles? Was it at the beginning there?
No, it wasn't.
I always thought it was your Charles impression.
It's my old man voice. I've just had a birthday.
Oh, happy birthday!
Thank you. I feel that I'm beginning to feel very old now, mid 40s. The chances are I've got less in front of me than behind now.
Oh, Jesus! This is a depressing way to start.
No, but you've got to be honest about these things, haven't you?
Well, you might get to 90.
Oh, it's unlikely.
Oh, dear.
I might go on. Maybe I'll be one of those people. I was reading the other day, I was watching a thing on telly about the First World War, and they had some archive footage of people talking about it in their old age. And I looked up some of them, because some of the names I sort of recognised, they were kind of amongst the famous last Tommies, you know?
Right.
And one of them lived to 100, I think it was 111.
Well, there you go.
100. I'm not sure when I get to 111.
So he got to 55 and a half before he was even halfway there.
I know. So maybe I have got that sort of time. But, I don't know how much fun life is at 111.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my mentality, really. You sort of do things that maybe are a bit, you know, not great for you throughout your life. Sort of enjoy your life. Mm. And then, because if it's going to shorten your life, that's kind of the trade-off. But it'll only shorten it for the last few years when you're sort of wetting yourself in a nursing home anyway. So, fine. I don't mind losing a couple of those years.
I think as long as you can keep your marbles and be physically sort of all right. I remember seeing this thing on telly. There were a couple who both were 100, I think, and they still lived in their little cottage. They were still getting up and making each other a nice cup of tea.
Think,
well, that's a nice thing, isn't it, to be 100 and have that level of independence.
That's lovely.
But can you imagine being 111? The things you've seen. I mean, if I get to 111, I'll live till 2088.
Wow.
Just imagine the sorts of things I might have seen if I lived to that long. Maybe I'll get to see hover cars.
Maybe. I was having a conversation about this sort of thing the other day with Mrs. Ben. We were sort of saying, I wonder which group of, which age range of people from the past or even the present have seen the most shit go down during their lifetime? Because obviously we've had some fairly momentous things, you know, large scale terror attacks, a new king recently, Brexit, a pandemic. We've seen a lot of shit, and I've only been here 34 years. So I just wondered, what would be the most sort of action-packed period of life you could live? Because, like I say, mine's been pretty hectic so far.
I think any lifespan shit goes down. You know, I think there's no lifespan where there's not a lot of shit happening. I think probably if you lived, I reckon from the late 1800s, let's say you were born 1870 and you lived to 100. Imagine what you would have seen in that time. You would have seen, you know, the sort of the changes in industry, the computers coming in. You'd live to see man landing on the moon. Imagine if you were born in 1870 and I said to you, if you live to 100, you're just about going to see man land on the moon. You'd say, don't be ludicrous. There were no cars in those days. There was nothing that would give you any clues that man could get to the moon.
Yeah, but I mean, there'd still be plenty of people alive now who were alive for the moon landings, of course. So, I mean, they've seen all this as well. So, I mean, maybe they're a good contender, but I mean, who knows? What I'm saying is I feel like I've already had a full lifetime's worth of big news shit going down. Don't you think?
Yes, I do. I also think we're so aware of the big global stories. Again, if you were born in the past, all this stuff would have been going on around the world. You just wouldn't have been particularly aware of it.
I suppose that's true.
It would have been printed in the press, but unless you were a newspaper reader, you wouldn't have a clue that around the world there was all kinds of shit going down.
But I think that the constant bombardment of global catastrophe is not great for your mental health, really, is it?
I suppose it's not. No, it's all quite depressing when you put the news on. I've just been away for a few days. And I'm not saying I took myself away from the news entirely. I'd still check it once or twice a day on my phone. But not having access to it on the telly, really, not having my laptop at hand at all times, just constantly checking it, seeing what's going on, it was quite nice. And then to come back, I've sort of gone straight back into it, watching the news channels for a little bit, seeing what's going on. And you think, oh, it's all bollocks, really.
I find you quite a frustrating friend to have, simply because you are always very much, like you say, finger on the pulse when it comes to news. And I kind of like to be that guy who breaks the interesting news to people. To be the first one to tell someone the thing they didn't know.
Yes.
And I never get that with you. You're always an hour ahead of me whenever I get any news.
I know. I can't help it. I think in the days before the internet, I wouldn't have been aware so much. But these days, like, if I've got a spare couple of minutes in between work in the day, rather than maybe go and get a cup of tea, go for a little walk, maybe play a little game, I'd just go straight to the BBC News website, have a little read, see what's going down, feel utterly depressed, and then go back to work.
I used to have a BBC alert thing on my phone, which would make a little sort of news chime every time something was happening. But it got quite depressing. It became like the Guess Who's Dead chime.
Yes.
And then when it wasn't that, it was just the most inane nonsense that I thought, how is this qualified for breaking news? So I got frustrated with it and turned it off.
Turned it off. It's a good thing. I've still got it on my phone. The breaking news thing pops up and you think, oh, what now?
But I mean, I still get it from Sky News occasionally. And the other day I opened it up and it was to do with Prince George photographed smiling at his birthday party.
Yeah, I mean, that's not breaking news.
It isn't. Not only is it not breaking news, it's not news. Child smiles at birthday party. Jesus.
The problem with this stuff being breaking news, a bit like the sports channels as well, like Sky Sports News, I mean, they have to fill it with so much bullshit. I mean, I don't watch that anymore. I used to be quite addicted to Sky Sports News, but these days I barely turn it on because it's such inane nonsense. How many times can you talk about one incident that happened at one football game over the weekend? And then, you know, you'd suddenly get breaking news across the bottom and it would be, you know, a midfielder from Rochdale has broken wind or something. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's not news.
I mean, it is fun though, because we used to do a feature on the radio, didn't we, of Not News?
Yes.
Which is where I would find these complete fluff pieces just used to fill space and report on what was being reported, which clearly wasn't news. I think my favourite of all time was when there was a news article clarifying that Jeremy Corbyn wasn't a vegan.
Brilliant. Superb, isn't it? What I love, this isn't breaking news. You don't get this to your phone. Can I just say about breaking news alerts to your phone, by the way? If they're sending you stuff to your phone that isn't worthy of being breaking news, it's a bit like the boy who cried wolf. In the end, there's going to be like, you know, Russia will launch this nuclear attack, and you'll get a breaking alert. The noise on your phone will ding or whatever, and you think, I'm not looking at it. I'm not looking at it because it'll be some ridiculous story. Next thing, you're being vaporized, Ben, because you've not looked at the breaking. Let's reserve the breaking news app or whatever it is, let's reserve that for the really, really major stuff.
Well, I have really stopped checking them as well now because, and I mean, with all due respect, from about the 9th of September to about the beginning of this week, every single notification I got was some sort of update on, you know, the movements of the Queen's final coffin, yes, resting places, etc., etc. And I'm sorry, but I'm respectful and I was interested to a point, but I mean, I was getting updated on the smallest detail, yes, which I just didn't need to know about, you know?
What I love about the non-news stories, and the newspapers, particularly online, do this a lot, they always do the thing about how amazed they are that someone's child looks like them. You know, it'd be like a story like, I don't know, like, amazing how David Bowie's son looks like David Bowie. Why is that news? Someone's child looks like them. I mean, the chances are that's going to happen.
Yeah,
and the other one that drives me absolutely insane, and they do it all the time, particularly the Star and the Mirror, is You won't believe how someone looks 30 years on. Someone unrecognisable 30 years on. Of course, because they're 30 years older. And I wouldn't say they're unrecognisable, but they're older. And yeah. I love it particularly with someone who's a child actor. You know, they'll put their names. Unrecognisable now, 40 years on. Yes, they did one film when they were four. Yes, and they're of course, unrecognisable.
Also, you and I had to go through the newspapers every single day just to look for the headlines and do the headlines first thing in the morning. And we noticed that the Daily Star, as you mentioned, particularly a shite rag that it is, they seem to pay someone round the clock to monitor Rachel Riley and her clothing and just sort of print anything they can find.
It was quite
disturbing.
It must have been a full-time job because every day. But anyway, so yeah, I'm a bit older. What I was wondering was, at what age do I become the person people come to for advice? You know, what age do I become sort of sage-like? Because I would have thought by 45, the younger people in my life would look up to me and think, well, you know, let's, like, Trev's going to be the man to ask about this particular situation. And I very rarely get it. And it's either that I portray publicly how fucking useless I am at most things, that they just think, no, he's not equipped to answer this particular question. There must come a point where they'll just because of an age, they'll go, well, the level of experience, he's going to be the man.
Well, I can come to you for would that make you feel better if I asked you for some advice at the moment?
Yeah. Have you got any?
I do, actually, because right. Okay. I'm a little bit pissed off
come
at the moment.
Come in, son.
Shit, King Charles again.
tell me, where is that stinking pen?
So, I'm a bit pissed off with work because I'm getting diddled.
Well,
at
diddled?
Both ends of the day.
Is that a police matter?
Basically, to give myself a fighting chance, because there's a lot of work on at the moment, I go in basically up to 45 minutes to an hour early for free, right?
Right.
Just to give myself a fighting chance to get my morning bit done before my afternoon bit begins.
Okay.
By the way, everyone I'm about to complain about, I like all of them. I have no beef with any of them.
You don't really, though, do you? I mean, that's one thing I've learned over my years. If someone says, no, I like it. I like all the people I'm about to. You don't.
So there is a colleague of mine who's been doing the job for decades and decades, and as a result, he's needing knee surgery very soon to give himself a new knee. And the other day, well, I say the other day, about a month ago, he asked, are you off in the next sort of 10-15 minutes? And bear in mind, the answer was yes, but only because I've come in an hour early to give myself a head start, right?
Okay.
Otherwise, if I was coming in on time, I wouldn't be anywhere near the time when you need me.
Right.
So, yes. Could you give me a lift home?
A lift home?
Yeah, because he's technically off sick at the moment, but because he's only got a dodgy knee, he's able to come in and just sort of do light duties, but then he goes quite early.
Well, this all sounds a bit like a scam to me. I'm on the sick, but I'm still coming in. This doesn't sound right. I'd certainly get HR to look into this situation.
No, as far as I'm aware, it's all above board. It's all fine.
Oh, right, okay.
Although that's a nice idea to bear that in mind if I want to get rid of this problem. So first day, I said, of course I will, mate. No problem. Happy to help. The next day, same time I come in, he's there again. Thanks for that lift home yesterday. There's no problem. Happy to help. Any chance I could get a lift home again today?
Oh, no, it's in the realms of taking a piss now.
It's happened every single day for the last month.
Well, you've made a rod for your own back now because you can't say no now.
I can't.
Can you?
No, and I thought about this. And by the way, my rest day, my one scheduled day off a week, marries up perfectly with his. So I never get a day off.
What
ever.
If you go in, don't go in early? And just see what happens. Because you've got to break the cycle.
Okay, so here's the problem. I used to go in early, like I said, to give myself a head start.
Yeah.
But then, if I've got to spend 20 minutes, 25 minutes dropping him home and then getting back to where I need to be, that negates the point of me going in early.
Oh, wasting your time.
So I could just go in, bang on my start time, which would then make me later finishing than I'd like to be. But also, it would then inconvenience him that he would then either have to find another wait home, or worse, he'll sit there and wait all that extra time, and then I'll be doubly fucked.
Well, this is what I mean. You've got to do it once. You've got to go in normal time once to see what happens. If you're sitting there waiting, then you've got a problem. You're never getting rid of him. This is like a parasite. This is like a tick on a hedgehog.
I feel like going in on time suddenly, when I've made a habit of going in early forever.
What would be worse if you went in at your normal time and he's sitting there tutting, looking at his watch when you arrive? I mean, that would be awful.
He did once make a... He said it in a way which was clearly a joke, but I was in a bad mood already and it just rubbed me up the wrong way. Yeah. He did once urge me to hurry up a bit,
right,
getting my stuff together so I could take him home. He was clear enough that he was joking, so I let it slide over me, but I was seething.
Well, it would be. This bloke sounds like an arsehole. You know, honestly, taking a piss, mate. No, I'll tell you what you need to do. I've got the answer.
Go on.
It's a very simple solution, this, Ben. What can I ask? Is this a company vehicle you're giving him a lift home in?
It is, yes. I've considered maybe starting to preach religion to him. Okay. Things like that.
Or preach the environmental issues. Say, look, by having two people in the car, that does add to fuel consumption, so you're killing polar bears, is that argument. But no, here's the answer, Ben. Very straightforward. Once you've got him in, crash the van. Smash straight into a tree. Two things will happen. One, he'll never want to get in a van with you again.
True.
Second, he might be so injured that he doesn't have to come into work. So everyone's a winner.
Well, he has been waiting a long time for this knee op. So maybe if I crash the van deliberately and send him to the hospital, I can kill two birds with one stone.
Push you up the queue a bit.
And I told you I was being diddled at both ends of the day.
Oh, yes, yes.
And this is really getting on my tits, this one. Basically, I do the same job, and I'm not going to name anyone because it's not my place, but there is someone who does the same job as I do, and he's paid until the same finishing time as I am.
Right.
And he leaves 30 minutes before I do every single day.
Well, it just sounds like he's more efficient, Ben.
No. I could be gone at 5:30. I could be, because I'm done by then, but I hang around till 6 to help out my other colleagues who are getting back later than me, and I help them unload, and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, this guy's gone.
Home.
Yep, this guy is gone. 5:30, he's on his way home. Mm. And I didn't want to sort of stitch him up or anything, or grass him up, because I'm not like that. But one of my managers noticed somebody else going home a bit early one day, and he was whinging about it. And I just said to my manager, look, you know, the other guy goes home at 5:30 every single day, so you can't really moan if someone else goes home a bit early, can you? And he said to me, this was the official answer, he said, no, but he lives about half an hour away, so I like to, you know, do him a favour and let him go.
Right.
And I thought, well, hang on a minute, that means I'm doing 2.5 hours a week, more work, and being punished just because I live locally. That can't be fair, can it?
No.
I got my calculator out. I totted it up, deducted holidays, and I worked out that I'm working 5 days a year more. When you top that up over a year, I'm working five, and I don't mean working days, I mean 5 24-hour periods.
Right.
I'm working more than this guy just because he lives half an hour away.
Well, again, the solution is very simple.
Go on.
Move.
Move back to Croydon. Keep my job in East Grinstead, move back to Croydon. Piss off at 4.
As you know, Ben, I like following stuff that's space-related.
Yes, yeah.
And as we mentioned earlier, I like to have my finger on the pulse of the news. Did you see the news this week about NASA's DART probe?
I didn't see this. I was too busy paying attention to Jupiter.
Well, no, that's very exciting. The closest it's been to Earth in 59 years.
And this is exactly why I didn't bother texting you about it last night, because I thought, he'll already know.
I went out to look at it last night.
So did I.
Couldn't fucking see a thing.
Couldn't. I saw a particularly bright dot in the sky, which wasn't blinking. It was to the west, where it said Jupiter would be. So me and the missus had a go with the telescope and the binoculars.
Yeah.
But we basically concluded that they were useless, and it just looked like a very hard to see white dot when you're using binoculars. So,
right.
But we tried, which I thought was the main thing.
Well, you've seen it. That's the main thing.
I guess so.
It was way too cloudy last night. It's way too cloudy tonight. So I haven't seen it at its closest. I saw it last week. Well, I thought I saw it last week when I was on holiday, because we saw the big bright thing in the sky. And then there was a debate about, was it Jupiter? Because Jupiter, according to an app, was in a different position. And then suddenly there was a shout of excitement. There it is! There it is! That was an aeroplane. Someone was pointing out.
Jupiter dashing through the sky.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, Jupiter doesn't have a blinking light as well. I always think that's a giveaway when you're looking up.
I almost texted you about that last night, but I thought, he'll already know. He'll already be out in the garden with his binoculars.
I was out in the garden, but too cloudy. Not a star visible last night. I was gutted. That's
the air pollution of Croydon for you.
That's it, yeah. No, but the DART probe. Now, this is very exciting, Ben, because, it's exciting and yet scary at the same time, because maybe NASA knows something they're not quite telling us.
Right. What? First of all, what is the DART probe?
The DART probe was a space vehicle that was sent up to deliberately crash into an asteroid to try and knock the asteroid slightly off course to prove whether or not this would be a way to protect the Earth should a huge meteorite be suddenly heading towards the Earth.
Now, was Bruce Willis involved?
Well, see, my worry is that if they're testing this out, is there one on the way?
I see.
Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's still a long way off. I mean, the one they tested it on, I think it was 7 million miles away.
Right.
And they hit an object called Dimorphos. The orbits are much larger asteroid. And they only want to knock it off course a little bit, so it will change the orbit of it. But they just want to prove the theory that by crashing a vehicle into an asteroid, you can knock it off course, and therefore it's possible that we could save planet Earth should we find ourselves in that sort of situation.
Why are we going for this sort of method rather than just obliterating it? Like, why don't we just send a nuke towards it?
All right, I'll just let NASA know that you've got
tell them I said it'll be fine.
Got a better idea. No, I don't know why nuclear weapons. Surely that would be a possibility. I mean, perhaps crashing a vehicle into it doesn't work. Send up the nukes.
So you're suspicious now that you think they're not really testing. They're sort of doing a dummy run for what they think will actually be the main event.
It just makes you wonder, doesn't it? Just makes you wonder as to why they've suddenly decided they need to do that.
I don't imagine it's that sudden. NASA tend to plan to do things for about three decades in advance, don't they?
Yeah, and they did launch this several months ago to get up there. But it was quite exciting. I mean, you had I didn't watch it live, but they were live streaming, because the probe had a camera on it. They were live streaming it as it was going to crash into it.
It must be either a fairly sizable probe or a fairly petite meteor you think of a humongous great comet or something plummeting towards Earth, and you really think that banging it's kind of like the equivalent of like running a wheelbarrow into an iceberg.
Well,
it's not going to really move it, is it?
I mean, as I say, Dimorphos, the thing that we hit, is 163 meters. I'm guessing that's across, it's wide, and the DART was only 19 metres.
That's not going to make a dent, is it?
Well, we don't know. Obviously, they've worked out the science. These are clever people, Ben. They've worked out the science. They must know that the force at which it's hitting it at would possibly be enough to knock it. Of course, again, this is all, it's the first time they've done it. I don't know whether they've been able to tell yet whether they have been able to knock it off course. I guess they're still waiting for the results. But if it works, then we can all rest assured, Ben, that should we find ourselves in a situation where we're facing Armageddon, then we can send up a probe, smash into it, get it. I mean, I'd hope they'd have one ready. I mean, that's the other thing. But I'm assuming if they can see this thing from 7 million miles away, if they could see one that's 7 million miles away and coming towards Earth, they would have a bit of time.
I guess NASA have better binoculars than I do then when I'm looking for Jupiter.
Yeah, they don't have sort of a pair of binoculars from the pound shop. They've got pretty sophisticated stuff, Ben.
Right, okay.
Yeah. No, I don't know if you know, but NASA, they've got a bit of money. They can...
I've heard.
They've got.
I imagine also they probably are quite confident that it will knock it off course, because I don't imagine NASA are just willy-nilly launching probes at things just on the off chance it works. There's probably quite a lot of science behind it, trying to, you know, like how the CPS won't bother bringing a case to court unless they're, yes, you know, 70% sure they've got a conviction. I reckon that's probably how NASA work as well.
Yeah, and they've got to prove the science. They've got to prove the theories. The theory is probably there. They can probably, you know, mathematically work it out and go, you know, theoretically, this should work.
Yeah, I mean, they must be eminently confident that it will work.
Yeah, I suppose to a degree. I mean,
to a high degree.
To
I mean,
a high
like,
degree.
If
yes.
someone could just say, listen, mate, on paper, this maths is rubbish. You're just sort of hurling something against a much bigger thing. This isn't going to work. So they must know it's going to kind of work almost certainly.
I mean, it's done its job so far. So I'm looking forward to see how it can happen. And then I can rest easy in my bed. But you mentioned Bruce Willis earlier. That's Armageddon, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is, you know, lots of people have been making that comparison to this, and that this is science fiction becoming reality.
Are you saying my joke wasn't as original as I was hoping it was?
No, I mean, it's everywhere, Ben. in fact, it's an old joke by the time you got hold of it.
Well, to be fair, I've only heard about this probe 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, no, fair play. For first hearing the news, you've gone straight, you route one. You've got
the obvious there, joke.
Got for the best joke that everyone's doing, you went straight for it. Congratulations.
It's a bit like whenever I'm scrolling through Twitter and I see something and I think of a funny joke and I go to type it in and basically a thousand people have already beat me to the punch on that joke.
Just, have you ever had a situation where you've come up with what you think is a cracking joke, right? Absolutely brilliant joke. I did this once with Frank Skinner was on the radio, and he was doing this story that was the story at the time that I think it was in Germany. They were bringing back a breed of cow that was Hitler's favourite.
Okay.
Listen, he'd been on Have I Got News For You? I'd watched that. And the joke I'd come up with hadn't come up. No one had told this joke. Frank Skinner was doing the story. And I thought, Frank Skinner's going to fucking love this. So I'm going to text it in to Frank Skinner.
It's going to be a pun, but I just can't work it out.
And I listened the whole show. I'm thinking, he's going to love this. This is like right up Frank Skinner's street. Nothing. And I was so gay. The joke was...
So this is... Hitler's favourite cow, is that right?
Hitler's favourite breed of cow. They were. I don't know, they were reintroducing them or something.
Right. So I'm nervous, I'll be honest.
So I said, oh yeah, they've got fucking loads of cows, but only one bull. I was delighted with it.
That's pretty good.
No one else had come up with it. Totally ignored by Frank Skinner. I was gutted.
Oh.
Anyway, this whole thing got me thinking. So this is Armageddon come true. It got me thinking about other things from films that you would like to see come true, or things from films you would like to happen to you.
Okay, so what have you got?
Well, I was thinking Back to the Future, obviously. That's got to be number one, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Where would you go if you could time travel?
Ooh. I think... I would like to leave the future to be discovered by sort of getting there naturally. I think because if you see something horrific, like the sort of dystopian end of the world disaster zone, that would really scare you. I think I'd probably like to go back and see something. Well, no,
go back to the Roman Empire, go and see the Colosseum and its pomp, see gladiators being...
I suppose, I mean... You'll hate this answer, but I suppose I'd just go forward and see next week's lottery numbers and then go back again.
Oh, I mean, you'd be...
And that way, the world is unlikely to be over in a week, and therefore I can enjoy the rest of my life, really. So, yeah, it's not the sort what of romantic answer you were hoping for.
Yeah,
but
what a waste of...
A waste? I'll be a millionaire, mate.
Oh, yeah, but I mean...
You won't be calling it a waste when you're on my yacht with me, having a beer and a champagne.
Oh, champagne. Right, we've got up in the world.
Well, I can afford it now.
You know, I think, fair enough, go and get it. Go and get the lottery. But
go on, then. What would you do?
But I tell you what I would do, and you already said you wouldn't do it because you'd find that depressing, but I'd want to go forward in time and just see how humanity comes to an end.
But hang on a minute, you can't do that. Why? If you've got a time... Well, let's hash this out. Let's say you've got a time machine.
Yeah.
And you're going to enter in a number to the year you want to go to. Humanity might have been wiped out by that time already.
Well, that's true, yeah.
So you can't know when humanity's over. You've just got to pick a year and go there.
Well, I'd just have to go incrementally So
you've got to wear the batteries out. I've got to get the lottery numbers.
Well, you've only got a week ahead. It's hardly used any battery at all. So, I mean, honestly, you've wasted the opportunity. I've got enough battery to see me through. So I'd go 12 billion years, first of all, into the future, just see what's about, see what's happening.
How much life has the sun got left in it?
I think it's 13 billion.
So you're really pushing the envelope here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that there'd be no human beings left.
Mind you, I say that you've still got a billion years to spare.
Yeah, which is a long, it's a long old time, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'd also, I'd even not quite like to go like 1,000 years into the future and just see how. We were talking earlier about someone's lifespan and the changes they see. When I think about my own life and my own demise, the thing that I hate thinking about, one of the things I hate thinking about, is that I'm not going to see the development of things. I'm not going to know how things are going to be. And that frustrates me, really frustrates me.
But that's just true of everyone, though, isn't it?
Yes, but some people don't care. But
I don't really care. I'll be dead.
I want to see. I sometimes think I'd like to go and see football. Would football develop and evolve? How different will football be in 1,000 years' time?
Somehow it'll get worse, I imagine.
What sort of rules would come into play?
They'll manage to suck even more joy out of it with increasing technological advancements.
So I'd probably go forward. I mean, otherwise, I'd like to go back in time, be around when man walked on the moon and experience that excitement. But it wouldn't be new excitement to me because I'd know about it.
Now, this is an interesting question. Obviously, you can go back in time safely. But if you've gone 1,000 years into the future and programmed that into your time machine, but in 500 years' time from now, nuclear war kicks off, the planet is obliterated, and there is no planet, and you tap 1,000 years into your space machine, time travel machine, then won't you be instantly dead?
Well, I don't know. That's a question I've often thought. What happens if you go too far, or something has happened, as you say, and there's nothing there to receive you, for want of a better phrase?
Yeah, so the gamble is, Trev, would you like to go 1,000 years and see the future? However, just bear in mind, if you say yes, it could be instant death.
Yes.
Would you go?
Wow.
I mean, you're 45 now. Your time is practically up as it is.
Yeah, so yeah. Why not go? Why not go and see what's... Because the chances are 1,000 years would be all right, even if they'd been... there's not going to be nothing. I think it's still...
We've already got enough nuclear bombs on Earth to destroy the world several times over. And with aging, possibly dying mental cases in charge of nuclear weapons, it's not unfathomable, inconceivable that it could happen.
Yeah, but it would only wipe... Living,
sleep well, everybody.
It would only wipe living things out, wouldn't it? It's unlikely that we're going to blow the Earth to smithereens.
It's possible.
I mean, it's possible, but I think unlikely. I mean, it's true, the moment I step out the time capsule, I'll have radioactive poisoning. But presumably, if I've got a time machine, I'll have suitable anti-radiation clothing. I don't know.
Presumably, if you... I don't know. How does that work? If you jump to the future, get radiation poisoning from a nuclear war, jump back, and then go back in time to what was present day, present day Trev hasn't been to the future because he's present day Trev, so therefore you've immediately shaken off your radiation poisoning.
So, effectively, I'm immortal.
You're immortal unless you zoom ahead to a planet which no longer exists and you are instantly killed by the cold... lifeless death of space. It's a gamble, mate.
It would depend on the sort of time machine you've got as well, because to survive that eventuality, I'm going to need a time capsule. I don't know why I keep calling it a capsule. A time machine. I'm going to need a time machine that is also a spacecraft, so that if I do go into the future and the Earth has been obliterated and I suddenly find myself in the middle of space, I can survive.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going to need. So that's my... That's one thing I'd like to have, Back to the Future time machine.
Well, I've always thought, and I think it's because, and I know sometimes we get a little bit political, and I don't intend to get too political right now, but you know I'm into my horror films.
Yes.
One of my favourite Saw films was, I believe it was Saw 5, where a series of people are all together, and they have to go through a series of challenges, and... Watching the conservative hustings recently really got me in mind of this, with all these sort of various contenders vying to survive and just sort of being very selfish and cutthroat about it. And without spoiling, it was quite an old film though, so sorry. Saw 5 spoiler alert incoming. If you haven't seen it now, I think they're about to do Saw 10 soon. So
I was going to say, because you could go 1,000 years into the future and you might get to the end of the Saw series.
Anyway, the moral of Saw 5, spoiler alert incoming, is that they all drop off one by one as they progress through these various rooms. And they finally realise in the final room that if they'd simply worked together, they could have all survived until the end. For example, I believe one of the traps was they had to make a ball float up to the top of a plastic container so they can grab it. And the only way of filling up the container is with blood. So one man slices himself very badly and he loses a hell of a lot of blood.
Yeah.
In order to get the ball to the top of the plastic container, something like that. I may be paraphrasing. And they realised that if they'd all bled a little bit, then he wouldn't have had to bleed so much and he would still be with them. And various things, they all suddenly realise, oh, there was space for all of us in that hole. Not just one of us. We could have all hid in there while the bomb went off. Or again, I'm paraphrasing. It's been a long time since I've seen the film. But they basically realised that without being selfish, they could all have got to the end of the film in one piece. And it just reminded me of, I wonder if that had been like, could we see the Conservatives in Saw 5 and how long they'd survive?
Well, that's probably the future of how they'll pick political leaders.
I think it should be.
1,000 years' time.
Future Conservative hustings in Saw 5. That's what I would like to see.
Well, I mean, what a metaphor for humanity Saw 5 sounds. I mean, I've always written the Saw films off as just gratuitous violence. But actually,
well, there is an element of that, I won't lie.
It sounds like it's a metaphor for humanity, that actually if we all worked together, if, you know, we wouldn't have wars, if we all just actually worked as one and towards a better solution for all of us and for the planet, wouldn't it be a better world?
Absolutely. Now, while you may knock the Saw films, and while I understand they're not for you, the Jigsaw Killer, there was always a message or a point to his traps, and they were survivable. Right. There was a brief period in the middle of the films where someone sort of bastardizes games and they weren't winnable, but that's me going off on a tangent again. But the point was, there was always a message, and it was usually about changing your life, improving yourself for the better, don't be a bastard, and now cut your leg off.
Right, so he's like a murderous Jerry Springer. His final thought. We've got the sort of bear pit, we've got the gore and the blood, but we finish with a moral to the story.
And it's really quite impressive that we're approaching Saw 10, because I think they killed him off after Saw 2, the main bad guys. I don't know how it went on for that long.
Any other film things you'd quite like to see?
I've always sort of wondered how well I could survive the sinking of the Titanic based on the film's representation of it.
Right.
And I think it depends if you're one of the officers with a gun or not. I think I'd be golden if I had a gun.
Oh, so you're working on the Titanic, you're not just a passenger?
Either, because, I mean, even if you're a passenger, you could commandeer someone's gun if you clubbed him over the back of the head with something.
But it depends, because if you were in, like, the whatever the class was where the gates were locked, you can't get a gun.
And again, if we're travelling back in time so I can try and survive the cinematic sinking of the Titanic?
Well, hang on, are we combining, you know, are you combining the two things here? There's no time travel in Titanic.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is, do I have to abide by the sort of manners of the film? I mean, because in today's society, completely rightly, women enjoy being treated equally to men. So if that's the case, I don't see why it shouldn't be a sort of free-for-all for the lifeboats.
So women and children, screw them.
Women and children, good luck.
Yeah, Ben's coming through.
He's commandeered the officer's gun. He's
throwing babies into the sea. I mean, this is 1912, Ben. You know, the society was very different then. Even
well,
now,
I don't
though,
know I if I have to
now,
apply.
It's go still on. Women and children first. I bet that's still the case.
Well, that isn't very woke, is it?
Well, maybe sinking ships and wokeness don't go together. I don't know. All right, well, let's imagine that you're there in 1912. You're adhering to the standards of the day, women and children first. How else would you ensure survival upon the Titanic? Is it, have you got any other strategies that would help you survive?
So I have to respect the women and children first message. Then, yeah. Okay, I think, well, here's number one. I'd say I try and reason with a woman or a child.
Right. Again, you're going to dress up as a woman?
I've used that tactic before in a podcast,
stolen
I'm
her
sure.
baby.
No, I'd say, listen, love, do you mind? You're getting on that lifeboat, which is fine,
yeah.
Apparently. But do you really need the life jacket as well? Because that just seems greedy. Okay. You're already floating. You're safe. I know you might capsize, but come on, fair is fair. Give me the life jacket at least.
Right, so what we're saying is if you're on the lifeboat,
then I've got a fighting chance.
No life jacket.
Then at that point, I don't need to worry about drowning. I only need to worry about freezing.
Yes. I mean, it's bloody cold, remember?
Yes. I need to work on that bit, but so long, I'm just trying to work on flotation first.
I mean, you probably only have minutes before hypothermia sets in. So the life jacket's pointless, to be fair. If you're going to enter the water, the life jacket's not going to be much use. The hope is that you fall in the water and will be picked up by a lifeboat. Because remember, the whole lifeboat thing on the Titanic was there weren't enough lifeboats for a start. Some of them left half empty to start with. I mean, the whole thing was a shambles. And the hope would be that you'd be in the water with your life jacket and a lifeboat that had space would pass and you'd be hauled in. That's your only hope, I think.
I think I've got it then. I think I've worked it out because you're right. Without warmth, flotation's fairly pointless. Now, women and children, apparently, they're untouchable as far as your rules go, which I think is a little sexist, to be honest. I think we should all be viewed equally. But fine, okay. Your rules, not mine. I wonder if a men fair game. Can I take down a fully grown man?
I reckon so. Because once you were allowed out, I'm assuming that you are you what sort of class passenger are you? I mean, are you below deck? Are you that kind of, you know, the poorer class? Have you got on with a very cheap ticket, or are you one of the elite? Have you been in the posh?
I certainly wouldn't. But despite where, you know, I know you like to say living in East Grinstead is like some sort of palatial mansion I live in or something, but no, I think I definitely have one of the poorer tickets.
Okay.
But all I'd then need to do would be to, again, from behind, because I'm a coward, batter someone over the head, steal his uniform and jump on a lifeboat and pretend to be one of the men who was sort of guiding the life rafts. You know, come on, women, come on, children, I'll save you, get in my lifeboat.
What uniform?
That way I look like a hero as well, then. It's great.
What uniform have you stolen?
Well, whatever uniform the actual blokes who row the, you know, lifeboats are wearing.
Right. Okay. I don't know if the passengers were probably responsible for rowing themselves. Unless, I don't know whether someone went down with them. That's a very good question. If there was, then that's a good plan.
There was that one guy, that sort of upper class bloke, according to the film, this is, of course, who he managed to jump on one of the lifeboats. I mean, I think he had a gun. That's what you need, is a gun.
A gun. If you're going on the Titanic,
take a gun.
Any boat. Any boat. The Isle of Wight ferry. Take a 12-bore shotgun, just in case.
Yeah, it won't help you float. It won't help you not freeze, but it will help you get on a boat.
And if things go terribly, just shoot yourself.
Did you have any more for yourself?
Well, the only other one I was thinking was, you know the film The Fly?
Yes, this is when... Is this the... Again, are we back to sort of time travel?
It's not time travel. It's sort of mixing two things. I think the idea of the film was the scientist was trying to transport something from one place to another.
And he's trying to teleport himself, isn't he? From one place to another, and a fly gets into one of the pods with him.
Yes.
And in the sort of science bit where he comes out the other side, it sort of cross-DNA'd the two of them.
That's it. And he's half man, half fly.
And what would you want to learn from this happening?
Well, I was thinking, what would I want to be crossed with? If I had the chance to cross myself with something, what would it be? And I wouldn't want to fly. I wouldn't want to cross myself with a fly. I mean, that happened accidentally.
I mean, but that would give you the power of flight.
But would I want the power of flight? I don't know. I think I'd rather be crossed. I was thinking this. I think I'd quite like to be crossed with like a lion.
Yeah, but you have to remember, mate, you don't get to choose how the machine will spit you out. It might just spit you out with a big mane and a tail. And you're just like the cowardly lion.
Yeah, I look like I'm sort of auditioning for a part in The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, so it might be completely useless. You might not have the great strength and sort of majesty of a lion. You just might have a tail, mate. It could be terrible.
It'd still be a talking point, wouldn't it? But no, I was hoping. Yeah, you're right. I was hoping for the strength and the power of a lion, so that everyone would respect me, and anyone that sort of annoyed me, I'd just roar at relentlessly. And if worse comes to the worst, eat them. I don't know where else would I want to be. Maybe a horse.
But again, if you don't get to pick the bits you want from the horse, then it's which bits? How interesting. Which bits would you pick?
You know, a long tail. But there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations for you. What you got for us, Ben?
This week, I'd quite like to recommend a podcast called The Diary of a CEO. And for the most recent episode, there may have been another one or two since, but I think the most recent one is an interview with Chris Kamara, sort of Sky Sports pundit legend, brilliant man, who really comes across very well. And he talks about his struggle with apraxia. And he comes across so well, and it's a really great interview, very interesting, although I would say quite sad, listen, and maybe if you're not really in the mood, because the news agenda recently has been quite bleak, so maybe one to bank if you're not really in the mood for it right now. But yeah, that's a good one. And also, I haven't heard it yet, but I've been informed that the same podcast does an interview with Gary Neville, which apparently is very good as well.
I haven't listened to the Gary Neville one. I'll look forward to that. I did listen to the Chris Kamara one, and as you say, it's a great listen. I will just say one thing about it, because as we know, you have to put a little description when you publish a podcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying mistakes don't happen, but on that one, it does say, after diagnosis with asphyxia.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
He's one of the most high-profile people with the disease. Get it out.
Oh, dear. It's unfortunate, isn't it?
I've got a couple of things to recommend for you. First of all, it's on Sky Catch-Up. It was on Sky Documentaries a few weeks back, and it's been one of those things I've been meaning to watch, Ben, and I know this probably isn't your cup of tea.
No, you know what? I know I take the piss, but I wait with bated breath whenever you tell me you've watched another documentary, because it could be bloody anything.
It's called Lancaster, and it's the story of the Lancaster bomber and the people that flew it and the sorties it went on during the war. And it's a fascinating watch.
You say, you know, you don't think you'll make it to 90. I think attitude-wise, you're already there.
No, it's fascinating, Ben. The Lancaster, there's only two that are airworthy these days. I think one's in Canada. There's only one in the UK that can fly, which I did see at the Platinum Jubilee. It was part of the RAF flypast. So it's quite a thing to see it.
Right.
But the stories from the people that flew them, that were part of the crews in the Lancasters, I mean, quite incredible stories.
Okay, well, I'm sure that'll be interesting to some people.
Okay. Other thing I want to recommend is Frozen Planet 2 is on, the new David Attenborough thing. I think we're three episodes in. I mean, you can't beat a bit of Attenborough, can you?
No, I'm surprised he's still, you know, knocking out these documentaries.
He's still going, Ben.
It's brilliant.
Still going.
National treasure.
Oh, mate, they are just absolutely incredible. Animals are just incredible, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Like, just the, what I like seeing about the animals is just their instinct. There was, what was it? It was some sort of, I think it was a chameleon, some sort of chameleon that lives high up, high altitude, where it's very cold. And I think it's the only chameleon that gives birth to live infants rather than lays eggs, right?
Oh, okay, right.
So it kind of walks along and the animals sort of plop out. But the animals seem to just have this instinct already to just grab a locust, you know, just,
oh, wow,
because they get so cold that the adults, when they're fully grown, it's so cold when they first sort of wake up, as it were, they can't move, but they've got this tongue that comes out and grabs a locust, and the baby seems to just come out and know how to do that. They also know they've got to go and find sort of undergrowth to go and hide in and find a bit of warmth. Just incredible.
I always think when I see like a baby deer, you know, it's been born and within about 10 minutes it's worked out how to stand up and run.
Yes.
And it gets me quite annoyed. I think human beings are useless, aren't they? They're helpless for years.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. I think we are the... I think I'm... Well, no, we are. I don't think there's even anything about it. We are the the creature that takes the longest to develop.
We are the most coddled, useless, helpless things.
But it's how we've evolved, isn't it? We haven't evolved to mature quicker.
I suppose it works. I tell you, the one thing that would put me off a little bit, just by the title alone, David Attenborough's Frozen Planet 2. Now, I'm going to go in thinking, well, this is going to be all the animals that weren't really good enough for, you know, Frozen Planet 1.
Right. These like the dregs.
The afterthoughts. David Attenborough's Frozen Afterthoughts.
He's like a really cold worm. We couldn't find anything else. We ran out of animals that live in the cold. All we found was this fucking little worm that does pizzle in the snow. But we've got to feature it because there's nothing else left and we need to eke 6 episodes out. And the final thing I'm going to recommend is the new series of Ghosts. Great sitcom. I think this is series 4. I just love it. Brilliant. It's on the BBC iPlayer.
Lovely.
So there we are. That's it. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.